انت بتسمع تسعينات اف ام، اجمل ذكريات.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Farah, and this is my show, Music with Farah, on 90s FM. Before we start, if you'd like to leave us a comment or suggest a song, drop us a call on +21 000 427 894. For tonight's show, I'm presenting a band that can be played at any time, whether rain or shine, whether morning or night. This band is a legend in its own right. This is none other than the fabulous, versatile Queen. But Queen didn't start off as a legend we know. Instead, let's go back to 1968, where Brian May was an undergrad studying physics at London's Imperial College, and he had a friend, Tim Staffel, who was a student at the Ealing College of Art. The duo was in a band called 1984, but unfortunately, the band disbanded in 1968. But May and Staffel still wanted to keep collaborating, and they went on to form their own band called Smile. But the duo was missing a drummer. That's when May posted an ad looking for a Ginger Baker, Mitch Mitchell-type drummer. This was noticed by none other than Roger Taylor, who would then become the drummer for the duo band Smile and Queen. At this point too, Freddie Bulsara became a part of Smile's inner circle, as he and Staffel were both attending Ealing Art College and were friends. Bulsara even suggested idea for Smile's look and musical style. Even with the relative success Smile saw, none of the recordings ever surfaced above anything.
Yesterday, my life was in ruin. Now today, I know what I'm doing. Got a feeling I should be doing all right. Doing all right. Feeling I should be doing all right.
In 1970, the band's lead singer, Tim Staffel, left Smile. He was frustrated by the band's lack of commercial success, and he joined another band to explore a different musical style. With only Brian May as the guitarist and Roger Taylor as the drummer, the band was missing one key person. But that's when our lovely Freddie Balsara came onto the scene. He was already a huge fan of the boys, and one thing led to another. Freddie Balsara joined the band in 1970, suggested the band name Queen, and ended up adopting his stage name, Freddie Mercury. But the band was missing the final member, a bassist. Though the group cycled through so many bassists, they couldn't find the right person to complete the group's sound. That's when John Deacon came in. Now, the funny thing is, Deacon actually saw Queen in 1970, but he wasn't too thrilled with the band. As he started to perform, the stage lights were dim, the band all dressed in black, dramatic and passionate. Unfortunately, Deacon was not a fan of the performance. Although the band originally did not make a lasting impression on Deacon, several months later, there he was, holding his bass guitar and accustomed amp in front of Brian May, Roger Taylor, and Freddie Mercury, auditioning for the bassist spot. And in 1971, Queen was an official four-member band. They were revving up their engine, energized to create the most intriguing track 3 years later. But we'll get into that soon.
Keep yourself alive. Come on, keep yourself alive.
Now we're in 1973, and Queen just dropped their self-named debut album. The final track of this album sparked a really interesting discussion, as there are many reasons why the song was made. But the general idea is that this track was already somewhat written by Mercury when the group was still forming. It was mostly just a recurring piece in their live shows. However, they included this unfinished instrumental as a teaser, which they would then complete on their second album. If you haven't guessed it yet, it's Seven Seas of Rye. This is one of those songs that can really make you get a feel of Queen's influences, but also what makes the basis of their sound. You have Freddie's piano driving the song, Brian's red special guitar solos, Roger and John providing that almost hidden groove that's like the backbone of the track, and Queen. Without further ado, here is the electric Seven Seas of Rye. After the electric Seven Seas of Rye, I'm ready to dive into the next track. Now, this track feels so complex and detailed, especially for its time. Liar was released on February 14, 1974 by Elektra Records in the USA. The track was produced by John Anthony, Roy Thomas Baker, and Queen. Now, what's fantastic about this song is that it starts off with this holy feeling, mostly because of the organ played by Mercury, which puts us right into the song and the idea of confessing one's sin, feeling anger, repentance over and over. In the background, Roger Taylor and Brian May's vocals give that song more of an emotional punch, as our main character grapples with defeat and fear. The song is so loud and so angsty, although between all the members, the standout in this track is Deacon's bass. His bass part slowly creeps up behind May's guitar, but then it hits you. It takes a spotlight, brief, fast-paced, and quick to the groove, perfectly in between the balance of the first half of the track. Here is Liar.
Try and help me, Father. Won't you let me in?
Liar!
your dying day.
Amen.
I'm gonna keep you till your dying day.
Rock Hard Liar, we've got Killer Queen. This track was written by Freddie Mercury and produced by Rory Thomas Baker and Queen. Now, this track is one of Queen's more playful and lighter tracks. It features so much, but the first thing I have to talk about is the song's opening. It has this almost sort of vintage feel, and that's what we call attack piano style. Attack piano style is an upright piano that's modified with thumbtacks or nails that are placed on felt hammers and produces almost tinny sound that feels similar to a ragtime style. But what's really special about the track is that it features Brian May's Red Special guitar. That guitar was built by May and his father when May was a teenager. May wanted the guitar to be one of a kind, and as he experimented with his friend's guitar, he realized he didn't want the guitar to be perfectly balanced. Instead, he intentionally made the cutaway on the lower side of the body where the neck meets the body much deeper. That made it easier for his hands to reach those higher top frets. May was also really resourceful when it came to building the guitar, as the wood from the guitar came from the fireplace mantle, while the body included oak scavenged from an old table. Although there were a couple issues at first, in the end, it took 2 years to build the Red Special. The Red Special works so well, especially in Killer Queen, because anytime you hear an echo, trill, or something that sounds like multiple guitars playing, that's all May. He uses a multiple track harmony to achieve those sounds. May's brilliance really shines through in Killer Queen, keeping up with Freddie's aloof singing. And even more than that, the song is just genuinely creative. When you hear the lyric, "Dynamite with a laser beam," listen closely to something called the flanger effect, which creates this almost swooshing sound that gives off a metallic feel. The track was so good that it hit number 2 in the UK in 1974 and became their first US hit, reaching number 12 on the Billboard Hot 100. Here is Our Majesty, Killer Queen.
She keeps a Moët Chandon in a pretty cabinet. Let them eat cake, she says, just like Marie Antoinette. A building remedy for Khrushchev and Kennedy. At a time of invitation, you can't decline. Caviar and cigarettes, well-versed in etiquette. Extraordinarily nice. She's a killer queen. Try.
out she couldn't care less. Fastidious and precise.
She's a killer queen. Gunpowder, gelatine, dynamite with a laser beam.
Guaranteed to blow your mind. Momentarily out of action, temporarily out of
class, so absolutely dry.
She's out to get you.
She's a killer queen. Gunpowder, gelatine, dynamite with a laser beam.
Guaranteed to blow your mind.
Anytime.
Recommended at the price. Insatiable and appetite.
Wanna try?
Now, off we go to the theatrics of Good Old Fashioned Loverboy. The track has a very fun, almost theatrical call and response, where Brian May and Roger Taylor's background vocals playfully tease or respond to Freddie's flirtatious vocals. The track also features Roger's drumming, which is more lighter and snappier, perfectly suiting the tack piano style in the opening of the song. It feels like even us as listeners were dancing along to the song. Now, for a fun fact. Listen closely to the bridge of the song. You'll hear this gruff voice that asks, "Hey boy, where'd you get it from?" That is none other than recording engineer Mike Stone's voice, which they used for a more regular gruff voice that counters Freddie's more fluttery, regal delivery. And I can't leave out the beautiful harmony of the song where our main character meets as the Ritz. Starting from 9, the music begins to mimic an actual clock, counting down and descending as Freddie sings. That descend is what we call a cascading melody. And towards the end of this verse, that ticking clock leads to this delightful ding of the clock. There is so much genius behind Good Old Fashioned Loverboy, and here it is in all its glory.
Dim the lights and sing you songs full of sad things. We can do the tango just for two. I can serenade and gently play on your heartstrings. Be a Valentino just for you.
Thank you. good old fashioned, lover boy.
Now, there is so much when it comes to good old fashioned lover boy, but I'm excited for this next track. This is one of Queen's much sweeter tracks, and it's called You're My Best Friend. It was written by John Deacon for his wife, Veronica, and it was released in 1975 on Queen's album, A Night at the Opera. Now, there is a bit funny of a back and forth on this song. Deacon wrote this song on an electric piano, and that's what it sounded best on. However, Mercury did not like playing the electric piano, calling it tiny, horrible thing. And Mercury has said before, why play those when you have a superb piano? So, Deacon insisted on using the electric piano, and he also ended up playing the Fender bass himself, while May, on the other hand, used his Red Special and recorded 5 individual guitar tracks to create the guitar harmony in the song. The song itself is super groovy, and even Mercury's vocals can be only described as sunny and playful, matching the overall energy of the song. It's a simple song, well, in Queen terms, and it's always a track you always, always look forward to. Here is You're My Best Friend. That was the beautiful You're My Best Friend. From the same album as You're My Best Friend comes a hidden gem called 39. This track showcases Queen's quieter folk side. May described the song as a sci-fi folk song about a man who travels through time and space, only to return home and find that a century has passed. That century took his loved ones who have grown old and passed away, where our traveler aged only a year. Although the track is more than that, May explained in an interview that he felt a little like this song when he was far away from home, seeing this world of a rock and how different it was from the way he grew up, and he does explain that most of his songs come from personal tracks. This track features an absolutely beautiful 12-string guitar played by May, while Deacon graces it with a super groovy electric bass, which is heard clearly throughout the track. The track is also sung by May and features some beautiful, phenomenal falsettos from Roger Taylor. All this comes together with heartbreaking lyrics, as 39 is a hidden gem in such a big album. Now, this was the beautiful 39, and this next track, though brief, I want to showcase a more moody yet complex side of Queen, in this track called Jealousy. Jealousy was a track written by Freddie Mercury for their seventh album, Jazz, released in 1978. The song grapples with possessive jealousy and how it ultimately leads to a destructive nature, leaving the main character grappling in the ruins of the relationship. The song features moody, descending vocals from Freddie, and Deacon mirrors that descent with his bass, creating an additional sense of sadness. Then, enter Brian May with this makeshift sitar-like tone, adding this unique texture throughout the song. Although the track may feel simple, it's a haunting melody that evokes deep pain and grief. Here we go, presenting Jealousy.
Can you be all to fall in love was my very first mistake. How was I to know I was far too much in love to see? Oh, jealousy, look at me now. Jealousy, you got me somehow. You gave me no warning. the heart. Life is much too short to while away with tears.
If only you could see just what
you do.
Jealousy,
you tripped me up. Jealousy, you brought me down. You bring me sorrow, you cause me pain. Jealousy, when will you let go? Got a hold of my possessive mind, turn me into a jealous kind.
How,
oh my jealousy, I wasn't mad enough to let you hurt my pride. Now I'm only left with my own jealousy. But now it matters not if I should live or die, 'cause I'm only left with my own jealousy.
Now, after an emotional roller coasters of theatrics and heart-wrenching melodies, it's time to switch it up by presenting one of the most famous tracks of Queen, which gathers everyone, and I mean everyone. This is We Will Rock You. The song was released on their 1977 album News of the World and was written by Brian May. Now, the story goes is that the song was written in response to a situation that occurred during their Day at the Races tour. According to Brian May, the group did an encore and went off stage. And instead of the audience clapping, they started singing You Will Never Walk Again, which took the group aback. That night, May went to bed thinking about what they could ask the audience to do. And the next morning, he had the idea for We Will Rock You. The stomp stomp beat was actually created by the members, who stomped and clapped over and over, then heavily layered and overdubbed these sounds to create the effect of the massive crowd. Now, this track really has no fluff. That is, until we get May's guitar solo towards the end. Fun fact though, the guitar solo at the end of the song was an improvisation Brian May played during the recording session. But May liked the riff so much, he decided it should end the song. But rather than re-recording the riff, the engineers just isolated that specific guitar phrase on the master tape. They duplicated it by copying that section of tape onto other reels. If you hear a weird slide or noise in between each phrase, now you know why. We Will Rock You became the track that embraced the changing audience. It was now time for both the band and the audience to interact with each other. So, wherever you are, if you can, make sure to stomp, stomp, clap to the beat.
You big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place, singing,
we will rock you. We will rock you.
Buddy, you're a young man, hard man, shouting in the street, you're gonna take on the world someday. You got blood on your face, you big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. Somebody better put your bag into your place.
We will rock you.
Sing it.
We will rock you.
Everybody,
we will rock you.
All right.
Now, this Queen song is one of their more versatile and quirky tracks. It's Crazy Little Thing Called Love. According to Roger Taylor, Mercury completed the song's lyrics in a relaxing bath in Munich, and then he presented the song to Taylor and Deacon. Interestingly enough, though, Mercury could only play a couple of chords on guitar, which became a good thing, actually, because it restricted him to working within a small frame. Once Mercury was done, they started recording with their new producer, Reinhold Mack, at Musicland Studios. Reportedly, May wasn't able to be there at the time of recording, as he was catching on some sleep after a previous late session. Though some people jokingly say that Freddie must have rushed it because they didn't want May to add a more complex rhythm to the song. Even May himself jokingly recalled that he came back and saw they'd already put down the backing track. Roger had the live drums and Freddie played the acoustic guitar. So May joked that rhythmically, all of it was Freddie and that he didn't play any of it. Later on, though, May did jump on the track for some soloing section of the song, and their producer Mac wanted that Telecaster sound to give off the authentic 50s feel. But May was going to play it on his Red Special. Mac pushed back, though, saying, if you want it to sound like a Telecaster, then you play a Telecaster. And May did. And then we got that beautiful, authentic guitar sound and Crazy Little Thing Called Love. Our fun little crazy little thing called love, here we jump into the magnum opus of Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody. The song began sometime when Freddie was still a student at Ealing Art College as a few ideas on paper. Brian May recalls that Freddie gave them the first glimpse of the song he had at some point called the Cowboy Song. He also recalls that Freddie would go in with tons of papers and start pounding on the piano. And the song he had was full of gaps. But he would explain that something operatic would happen in this section and so forth. Eventually, Mercury said he believed he had enough material for about 3 songs, which he was thinking of blending into a one-long extravaganza, which would eventually become the 6-minute multi-genre track Bohemian Rhapsody. Queen rehearsed the track at Rich Farm Studios around mid-1975 in Surrey, and then Mercury spent 3 weeks honing the song. by the summer, they were ready to record, and taping began on August 24, 1975. A week was devoted to the opera section, where Mercury had written out all the harmony parts. For the chorale section, the group layered more than 160 tracks of vocal overdubs using a 24-track analog recording, but the layering was achieved by repeatedly bouncing the tracks. May said they ran the tape through so many times that it kept wearing out, and once they held it up to the light, they could see straight through it. May recalls, every time Freddie decided to add a few more Galileos, we lost something too. Although when the track was finished, the band was told the song had no hope of getting airplay. But with the help of Kenny Everett, a Capital Radio DJ, who was a friend of Mercury, he ended up playing the track 14 times over a single weekend, eventually leading the track to go number one on the UK charts. This song needs no introduction. Here is Bohemian Rhapsody.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see.
I'm just a
come, easy go, little high, little low.
Anyway,
the wind blows, doesn't really matter to me.
Mama just killed a man.
Let me go.
Let me go.
You'll not let you go.
Let me go.
You'll not let you go.
Let me go.
Oh,
mama.
Mamma mia, mamma mia.
Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has the devil put aside for me, for me, for me.
All right, and after our beautiful Bohemian Rhapsody, I want to wrap up this show with one of the most emotionally charged songs, Who Wants to Live Forever. And I'm going to play The Show Must Go On. The song began as a chord sequence developed by May, which became the basis of the song. May and Mercury then agreed on the theme and drafted the initial lyrics, and May completed the remaining words and melodies. But during the 1990 recording session for the song, Mercury's condition worsened, and as they pressed the final demo, May questioned whether Mercury would be able to record the demanding part due to his health. However, Mercury uttered the words, "I'll do it, darling," and we got that beautiful track we now know. The song feels like a return to Queen's staple sound. May's guitar is soaring, Roger's drums are blaring, loud and angsty, and Deacon provides the bass that holds the song together. Then, as we reach the explosive bridge, because it's Queen, there's still that heavy glimmer of hope as we keep listening to Mercury's fiery passion. The song carries the sense of a final show, and you have to give it your all. It feels metaphorical, but it's also Freddie truly giving the performance of a lifetime. As we get to the outro, we have a beautiful crescendo that sustains until the end, and we get everything all at once. It swells with one final push and yell into the world. Before we get into The Show Must Go On.
Aside for us.